This is Tamara from WGXC introducing another in our series, After the Flood, reports about the one-year aftermath of the storm surrounding Hurricane Irene, August 27th, 28th, 29th, and into September 2011 as Tropical Storm Lee hit a week later. This show is The Watershed Post and features interviews that Dharma Daily did with editor Lissa Harris, Andrew Giaromo, and other audio clips from managing editor Julia Reichel from the week after the flood and a year later.
You're listening to the Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour Special Hurricane Irene Impact on the Catskills Edition on WGXC Radio in Greene County. If you'd be so good as to interview me, as I'm the eyewitness on Shandaken this morning, I'd be obliged.
I would be delighted to interview you about Shandaken. So, Julia has been out in the field all morning, riding around on an ATV with first responders, and to some of the more remote parts of Shandaken, where we hear people are still stranded behind roads that have washed out, and where there are still major communications issues in the field. Julia, what are you seeing out there? First off, how is Olivarria Road?
Olivarria Road is pretty nightmarish at points, and it's funny, that's sort of a freakish thing about this storm. There are parts of it that are pristine, totally lovely. At points when I was riding on the ATV today, it looked like just any other gorgeous summer getaway in the Catskills. But I passed the Olivarria Maple guy. I think the name of the proprietor is I von Baron. You'll have to excuse me. We're yelling at each other from across a creek here. His house has half of it is falling into a ditch. His wife is doing laundry in an enormous sinkhole. I kid you not. There are actually a lot of people up and down Olivarria Road who are doing laundry in the streams that have jumped their banks. And when I passed Irv, I said, "How you doing?" And he said, "We're open. We're open. We're selling." And he had his sign up, the Olivarria Maple sign. He was saying, "I ain't done. I'm open for business."
That is amazing. I wonder what the size, the official size of the Olivarria Road economy is right now. It's amazing that there is a business up there still operating. People doing laundry in streams. That's just incredible.
We have Lissa Harris on the line from the Watershed Post. Lissa, first, I guess, tell our listeners, what is the Watershed Post?
The Watershed Post is an online news site. It's at watershedpost.com, and we cover the Catskills and the New York City watershed. It's about a five-county area, and so we do a mix of original news reporting and linking to interesting news stories from around the region. Greene, which is you guys' territory, Sullivan, Ulster, Delaware, and Schoharie counties.
Tell us, what was the media landscape like before you guys started there? Covering things?
It's a funny area because there's actually a lot of newspapers around here, but most of them are little weeklies for one or two towns. It's an area that the daily newspapers don't really cover much except as an afterthought to their more urban regions. There's daily papers kind of scattered around the edges of our territory, you guys over in Catskill are lucky to have one. But most of our territory is very rural and, doesn't get a whole lot of daily news coverage. And some places don't even have a weekly paper. So, there really isn't one media outlet that covers the Catskills, or there wasn't until we got here. And we've watched a kind of media renaissance happening with online and also with radio. You guys and WIOX started up since we arrived here about 2 years ago, and more people are blogging and jumping into online media, and so it's really cool. It's really cool to watch that even as print is kind of struggling and trying to find its way, that other media outlets are cropping up.
And what year did you guys start?
We started building the website in 2009. We launched it in January 2010. And it turned out to be pretty good timing because we got, in 2010, we got some coverage of some more minor floods under our belt, and then when Irene hit, we were as ready as we were ever going to be.
Where are you? What happened to you during the flood?
Well, my law office is on Main Street in Margaretville.
Gotcha.
Where it was. About 7.5 feet of water came through my office.
This is the building across from the Village Pub, yes?
I'm across from the Village Pub, kitty corner from the pub. That's correct.
And where were you when it started flooding? I hope you weren't in your office.
I was in my office. Actually, it was amazing how fast the water came up. At 8 o'clock, I was sitting at my desk doing work. And at 8:30, I looked out and said, boy, that water is coming awfully fast. I started trying to get as much of my files safe as I could. And by 9:30, I was waist deep in water.
Waist deep. We said, were you actually like wading through your office?
I was until the windows went out and I got out of there.
That's terrifying. Were you in touch with people, emergency responders at this point?
I was not, but I'm going to tell you that the governor is on his way up, so I'm going to hand this over to Jessica.
Marvelous.
Julia, Governor Cuomo has just walked in, and I'm going to pass the phone right over to him.
Thanks so much, Jess Vecchione. Governor Andrew Cuomo, this is your second visit to Margaretville in a week. Thanks for coming.
Yes, it is. I hope they aren't seeing too much of me.
And we're doing an hour-long show about the effects of flooding throughout the Catskills, especially on the Margaretville-Roxbury area. Why are you in town today? What are you doing?
Well, I wanted to come back, and I wanted to see how it was going and how people were doing. I was here just when the water was really starting to run. There must have been 4 feet of water in the downtown area when I was here. And we've been working with federal officials. We had Secretary Napolitano in here today. I just saw her and the FEMA director, Federal Emergency Management Agency director. I want them to see firsthand the level of damage we have here so we get the federal assistance we're going to need.
How is the federal response going to be organized? Is there a FEMA person designated for Middletown or Delaware County?
Well, the first step we took today, the president signed the disaster declaration, which means we qualify for aid. And FEMA has their regional director here, Lynn Canton, who is very nice. I happen to have worked with in a small world story. I used to run a department called HUD, Federal Housing and Urban Development Department. And HUD did disaster assistance, disaster reconstruction. And I worked with FEMA in Puerto Rico on the aftermath of a disaster there, a hurricane there. And Lynn Canton, who is now the FEMA regional director, I worked with in Puerto Rico. So small world story. She's here. She's very helpful. But Secretary Napolitano herself was here, and she made it clear that they're going to do everything they can. And that's important because we're starting to rebuild. You see, there's a lot of energy there. Even in Margaretville, you can feel it. People are coming together. But the bottom line is the bottom line, and the bottom line is we need economic help. This is not a part of the state that has a deep pocket.
That was a really challenging thing for all the media outlets around here to cover because there were widespread communication failures across the territory. We had people calling us from CNN and NBC and downstate saying, hey, we want to send reporters up there. Where can we send them? And we were saying, hey, all the roads are closed. Sorry, the thruway is closed. good luck getting up here if you don't have a helicopter. So, it was really tough.
So how did you work around some of those physical, literal physical obstacles?
Well, we honestly stayed put for most of the time in our apartment in Andes, which magically never lost power or internet, which we expected it to. We expected our internet connection to go down. And so before the flooding really got underway, when we knew it was coming in and it might be bad, we started reaching out to other reporters and people that we knew in the area that we thought were conscientious and would be good news gatherers to help keep a live blog running during the storm in the event that we lost power. And a bunch of those people stepped up to help us get news and publish it, but we never lost power, so we were able to be there the whole time as well, and it just sort of snowballed into this massive collaborative news gathering effort between professional journalists and ordinary citizens who were stopping by our live blog because it was really the only live source of flooding news. We had a GIS professional who helped us create a live map of road closures.
And what is GIS for?
GIS is Geographic Information System. So this is a guy that does consulting on computer maps for little towns around here, and he noticed that we were trying to pull together some information on road stuff, and he was, this was his field of expertise, so he pitched in on the spot, and we were gathering information from people about what roads were closed, and he was putting them on a live map. So it was kind of amazing to see people like that who we'd never met before pitch in to help us out.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking to Lissa Harris from the Watershed Post, a blog that covers all the Catskills.
What I am doing right now, in addition to being live on the radio with you all, is I am in a forum, a live blog forum that has been running perpetually 24/7 with moderators staffing it around the clock on www.watershedpost.com. This thing has been running since Saturday, absolutely around the clock. And I'm so grateful to everybody that has pitched in to help us with this. And in this forum, people are posting the most current news that they have. I have heard from some people that they are actually calling each other on landlines and delivering the latest news to people that are stranded without power or internet from our live blog over landlines. And so this has become a really vital communication tool, both for people that are trying to figure out what's happening on the ground and where they can go, what they can do to help, and also for people that are watching from around the world. I'm just looking at this forum right now, which you can see at www.watershedpost.com. Click on the big gray box at the top of our homepage. I am looking in this right now, and we have 1,598 live readers watching this forum at the moment, sharing information about the flooding. And that's just astounding. So a huge shout out to everybody that has been helping their neighbors figure out what's going on this blog right now. It's getting very meta up in here because people are now talking to me on the blog about me talking to them.
Tell me your name.
Andrea Girolamo.
Alyssa and Julia, who run it,
okay.
who founded it. But it is a community-based reporting model, very small scale. They both come from the world of alt weeklies and wanted to do something that was very as local gets.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been the managing editor?
Since right after Hurricane Irene, actually.
So yeah, right.
It's
right
how
after.
I got involved with them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So actually, I guess I would say...
What exactly... how would you describe the work that you did during Irene? What was it that you were doing?
It was various volunteer positions, I would say. I ran this live blog that the Watershed Post began, that started on the 27th of August. It started on the Saturday. Before the storm. So they started this live blog to keep people up to date on what was happening, you know, literally town by town, road by road.
Well, so this is Jean Rosa, the head of the Margaretville Fire Department?
That's right.
Thank you, Jean, for being with us. What are you seeing? How is the state of affairs in Margaretville today?
Well, currently here in the village of Margaretville today, we're helping residents get their stuff out of some of the buildings that are currently deemed unsafe until repairs can be made to them.
And which buildings are those?
It would be the buildings on Main Street in the block that the Cheese Barrel is on.
I heard there were rumors flying yesterday online and offline that those buildings are in danger of collapse, that they've shifted. What are the hard facts about the state of those buildings on Main Street?
Well, we've had one structural engineer make an assessment of those buildings this morning, and a state structural engineer is supposed to be here, I believe, tomorrow to make his assessment. There are some concerns with possible settling on the back of the buildings and such, and They are deemed unsafe at present for people to be in them, so we're helping people get their possessions out. And that's pretty much where we stand. Nobody's made any decisions about demolitions or anything like that, and there's no indication that they're in imminent danger of collapse.
I saw photos of a earth mover moving debris out of the CVS in the Freshtown parking lot. I believe it was yesterday. Are there demolitions underway on the CVS?
Actually, the CVS store did collapse on its own Monday, I guess in early afternoon and Monday. It did collapse, and we immediately removed any possible debris, further collapse that could be a threat to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the process of being cleaned up now so that the structure, part of the rest of that structure, which is the Freshtown, can begin their process of restoring their business.
Were you, there was an AP video report of interviews with our first responders in Margaretville. I think that it reported that you saved 42 people during the flood. Is that number correct?
Yeah, during Sunday's flood, we had 42 individuals that we had to rescue. All of those were what we call swift water rescues. We had the assistance of Sydney Fire Department and the Delaware County Sheriff's Department to use some boats. And we also had two people that were actually airlifted off the roof of their house.
With a helicopter? I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, that occurred up in Kelly Corners.
I have heard that there was an air rescue in Kelly Corners. So that's part of the 42?
Yes, that's part of the 42. That's actually part of the Middletown-Hardenburg Fire District, which is what the Margaretville Fire Department is part of that Middletown-Hardenburg Fire District. That's our response area.
Speaking of Hardenburg, how is Hardenburg?
Hardenburg has been been hit extremely hard. It's basically cut off, or it was cut off. The people in Hardenburg have managed to build themselves makeshift roads, but they are still very limited access to those areas. Haynes Hollow, which is off the Drybrook Road in the town of Hardenburg, has been completely destroyed. I assume, by what I've been told, I haven't been able to get there to see it myself, but by what I've been told, they're many months away from being able to return to life as normal up there. Ryder Hollow had some major damage as well in that area.
Is anyone still stranded anywhere in your response area?
Yes, the people in Haynes Hollow are definitely stranded. We have relief operations going on there today. I have crews working with New York State Forest Rangers to take in food to those people. We're also doing the same thing in some of the portions of Ryder Hollow in that same area.
How many people would you guess at?
I think in the entire upper areas of Drybrook, you're probably talking upwards of 75 people in that area that have limited access, limited ability to leave that area or get supplies.
This is the problem we're seeing across the Catskills. The people who are stranded are the ones with no electricity, no phone, and no contact for the most part, and therefore nobody really knows that they're stranded. This is the first that I've heard confirmed that 75 people have limited access in Drybrook Road, and that's pretty stunning. We want to draw attention to that because I think that should be where the response efforts are really focusing on. I mean, you tell me, you're the first responder. Is that the most dire situation, people who are still stranded?
Yeah, that's for us, that's been our priority at this point, is to try to make sure that they have adequate food and water, ice, that kind of thing. And then secondary to that is, of course, the situation we have in the more populated areas, such as here in the village of Margaretville. We've got major safety concerns with
Alyssa Harris.
Alyssa Harris.
And I am the editor of the Watershed Post.
The first part is giving out information about the weather. Then it's kind of like maybe an assessment period of people trying to figure out where roads
What's
are closed.
Happening. Where are roads closed? Where are the towns that are worst hit? We're starting to get images. The images are scary. Yeah.
And then that transitions into the relief period.
At a certain point, that transitioned into the relief period. And the relief period went through several stages, too.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that really made a big impression on Julia was this thing about clothes. people needed clothes for about a minute. And everybody and their grandmother came out of the woodwork to give clothes to churches and nonprofits and people that were asking for them, people that weren't asking for them. There were so many clothes. Julia did a profile of a volunteer in Margaretville, Dorothy McFay, who has spent the better part of the last year wrangling with all the thousands and thousands of pounds of clothes that were donated, 99% of which were completely useless to the relief effort and were in fact a distraction from the relief effort,
mm-hmm.
because they had to be dealt with. But that's what happened.
For those of you who have been listening, that's the Watershed Post has been kind of one of the most essential information lifelines over the past couple of days. They've got a live feed happening. Here
this
they are.
Julia Reichel reporting from the flooded out but still operating Roxbury WIOX 91.3 studios. And Lissa Harris, my co-editor of the Watershed Post, is on the phone. Hi, Lissa.
Hi, Julia. I'm actually quite surprised to hear that you were able to get in. That's marvelous.
Yes,
I am. We are both on the air.
They're hurting. There are a lot of people that have no home. They have no possessions. I mean, there was one home I that was in the video I did. I mean, it's just destroyed. A woman with five kids. I mean, mm-hmm. they had to run out. They had 20 minutes from the time they realized that the river was going to come into their house till they got out of their house. You can't really collect any of your belongings in that amount of time. So they have nothing, and all the populations. You have the Hasidic population out on the street. Everybody seemed to be communicating and reaching out and finding ways to help each other out. It's again, you know, these communities are really used to fending for themselves and, you know, taking care of themselves, and that's what they're doing. They're out there doing it.
You're listening to the Watershed Post half-hour news hour special Hurricane Irene impact on the Catskills edition. Liz, are you still there?
I am still with you.
What did you think of the government response to the crisis?
It seems like a really big question. There's so many levels of government, right? And we saw heroism on all of those levels. And we also saw incredible communication failures. And, you know, just things, that responses that didn't get underway in time. And it really was a very mixed bag.
Do you think that did the crisis spark any changes for the government? Are you seeing better?
I think people are talking now more about disaster response. Things are very slow to change, especially in small towns, and I don't know what kind of long-term changes are going to come out of this. I really hope that it will result in more energy being put toward, how do you get information out to people when there's a disaster? Because this is something that a lot of towns really didn't think too hard about, and they were confronted with it suddenly, and counties as well. I would love to see more towns and county governments embrace the internet as a way to get information out, because it persisted in, you know, when phone lines went down in a lot of places, people were able to access it. It's also a really, it's a quick way to get information out to the media, and the media can pass it on to citizens. I think just in general there needs to be more thinking in all levels of government about disasters. How do you respond to them?
And I know you need to get back to the Watershed Post, but how did the crisis Hurricane Irene change the Watershed Post? That's an easier question for you, I guess.
It put us in the spotlight because it put the whole region in the spotlight. We had a lot of media interviews after the flood, and during the flood, actually, media outlets were interviewing us to find out what was happening here, and then there were very few sources of information. So that was, it had a lot of people calling us and knocking on the door, and I think it also really cemented our place in the local community. We got Delaware County's New Business of the Year award last year, and I couldn't believe it. We were at this ceremony, and our fellow honoree, which got the New Business of the Year, or they got Business of the Year, we got New Business of the Year, excuse me, was the Tractor Supply Store in Delhi. It was this big brick-and-mortar store that has, you know, it's very visible on Main Street, employs a lot of people, and then there was us, and we were two people.
Do you guys have a sign outside?
No, not even. We work out of our house. We are.
There's no physical trace. There's no physical trace of the Watershed Post anywhere.
We're a startup. We have been very lean and mean since day one. So for us to be there, you know, with this big box store that is so visible in the community and has so many employees, and these guys, you know, these forgive me. There's like Delaware County good old boys, you know, all these business owners, and they stood up and gave us a standing ovation, and I almost burst into tears. It was amazing, and we're like, this is what we came here to do.
So you feel like the blog and the web coverage has reached rural Catskills, that they're reading you as often as they're reading their weekly newspaper.
I hope so. I hope so. And absolutely. We're reaching people that don't have cell phone service, that might not even have broadband, and they're reading us because we're talking about things that they care about.
Mm-hmm. And also, in a good way, more people assembling their own information networks, which is what happened with us, which is why our effort gained so much traction. It's not because we were posting so much of our own original news reporting.
Mm-hmm.
It was because people banded together to say, we are going to make this an information channel.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to help each other out.
Right.
So that was much, much more than the sum of its parts, because everybody decided to pitch in on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the positive side, was that people are really resourceful about taking care of themselves. And when it means, you know, there's trees down in the road and you move the trees so that you can get your car through, or you build temporary... We saw this amazing video of people building a temporary bridge so they could get their neighbor's car across over this little ravine. It was totally astounding. People did that with information as well.
The preceding show was produced by Free 103.9 at the WGXC Studios in New York.